Let's be honest, for the CO2 transformation of this planet, we desperately need ideas because it's not yet solved. So let's hope that your company, my company, employ a whole bunch of people that still have ideas.
Transportation Matters. The CEO podcast of Daimler Truck.
Welcome to a new episode of Transportation Matters. My name is Martin Daum. I'm the CEO of Daimler Truck AG. I'm very much looking forward to today's discussion with one of the most important minds in the German industry. Dr. Stefan Hartung has been chairman of the board of management of Bosch since 2022. As head of research and advanced engineering, he is also the company's top technician. Bosch is a global technology group with more than 400,000 employees active in business areas as diverse as power tools, household appliances, automotive and commercial vehicle technology. Thanks to the various business areas, Stefan Hartung has a comprehensive view of the transformation towards CO2 neutrality, and I'm very curious to hear his perspective. Where does he see the greatest opportunities and challenges for our industry? Stefan, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much, Martin.
I know you are the top manager of Bosch, but I never knew that you are the top technician of Bosch at the same time. That's amazing. Two jobs in one. Which one takes a larger amount of your time?
That's a good question. For sure, the CEO job takes most of the time because you have to run all the processes, you have to do the meetings and the preparation and the formal stuff, because that's what CEOs have to do, right? We should not do anything wrong. So we spend a lot of time to do everything right, which is obviously a dream to really achieve it, but that's consuming a lot with the team, with the management board, and all stakeholders involved. On the other hand, if you have studied technology, and I did this, manufacturing technology, and I still have factories in my primary mindset, you spend a lot of time thinking on technology and working with technology people in the company all the time. And it's always in your back of the mind, even if you deal with commercial questions, you still always have the technology questions in your background. And obviously, there's also formal time I spend on technology with all the different boards and people I have to deal with and I like to deal with, because it's a love you never leave.
And what fields of technology are at the moment the ones that excite you the most?
Oh, that's an array of things. First, it's in everybody's mind, obviously, the AI technology, which is evolving, the large language models and the implications on things that are not language. So especially if you see large language models applied in things like video or pictures or radar or technology, which doesn't sound like language, but language models can be applied in these areas. On the other hand, obviously, also the technologies that are modern and are transforming the world away from CO2, because those are the technologies that we all need. That's also shaping Bosch. At the same time, I'm very keen on looking on technologies that are kind of radically changing things. So things that are big bets, that are far throwing forward the ball. So we're working on some parts in the medical technology area and things that actually Bosch is not known for. And that's important also to do, because you have to work on things that are also not happening next month or next year, but in the far future.
And staying for a second on AI, I can confirm to everyone listening, Stefan Hartung is a real person because he sits right across from me. Yeah, we are both from the Stuttgart area, so this is an unusual podcast we do in person. So it's not AI. But Stefan, could you think in a distant future that I might ask Stefan Hartung from Bosch over the air and a computer animated AI answers in your specific tone with your humor?
Oh, that's definitely possible right now. And we saw people giving speeches on big screens. And after the speech, half of the audience was irritated because some people said, have you seen the jacket? The jacket didn't look quite right, but everything else looked perfect. So maybe that was just an AI model. So I think we'll have that, especially on speech and also content. You will get content that I probably have said in the past. Mm. But maybe you don't get exactly the content which I give you just spontaneous right now.
Right. Okay. Perfect. But this is spontaneous. This is right now. This is not artificial intelligence.
Yes.
You have to look forward to the podcast we do in 2030 when the two AIs of Martin Daum and Stefan Hartung look then back.
Yes.
Okay. But for today, if we look at transformation, and let's focus today, transformation versus CO2 neutrality, how would you look at the status Bosch has today going for CO2 neutrality. I can understand it's potentially a little bit like our company. You plan a lot ahead, but you still, the bulk of your business is conventional technology.
Yeah, and that's, I think, we have all to face the truth that the transformation of the world away from the CO2 is kind of the biggest thing ever done to mankind. And mankind has to do this with the largest technical and behavioral operation ever seen. And that's, I think, a bit underestimated what it means, because all the clothing we wear, all the food we eat, or everything we drive, everything is CO2 based. Why? Because that's what made mankind big. We got the fire. So we used the fire since whatever, 50 to 100,000 years, and became very good at this. Now, as a company, obviously that's a different question than talking about all of mankind, but still we have to see it's a huge effort to become completely CO2 free in terms of everything you do. For the company itself, we neutralize the company from CO2. That means we use green electrical power and compensate actually only 700,000 tons CO2 in the end with some compensation. All the rest is fundamentally CO2 free on the scope 1 and 2. But you mentioned it. The key thing is that in the end, all products we produce, all products that are used from us, and all indirect effects we also incur have to be CO2 free. And that's a much bigger endeavor. And that will take years before it is fully in effect.
And when you look at transformation, is it a cultural change inside the company? Is this accepted, or is it just a check the box issue?
Well, for us, we have this invented for life topic where we run the company on, and people are enthusiastic about this scheme that technology plays a role in making the planet CO2 free, because that's what our contribution should be. It's not just that we want to be ourselves CO2 free. The question is, what is our contribution to this transformation? And that contribution has, from the company side we run, to be a technology contribution, which is something where we offer products, we offer services, we offer software, we offer all technology we do so that people can have a CO2-free life and still have a good life. Because that would be, I think, the key of the transformation. I think we all know at some point in time, the consumer decides. And if the consumer decides against CO2-free life, then we all don't have a chance.
Now, when I look at that, first of all, Bosch for me is the archetypical German company. But you are not a German company. Yeah, you are a global company everywhere. Do you see the drive for CO2-free globally similar, or is it a typical German or a typical European issue? Or how do you see that if you look at the vast expanse of Bosch globally?
Well, if you see the globe now with the various political systems, opinions, and streams of distribution of wealth and these questions, meanwhile, I would say we are in the stage that most of the planet has understood that there is a problem to deal with, which is a big achievement, because if you think 20 years back, that was by far not the case. Many, many countries have now taken steps to really do something about it. So think about how to motivate people, get things done towards the emission reduction. Now, there's different talk and different actions. That's for sure. Sometimes the talk is louder than the action. Sometimes you see very good action, but you don't hear a lot. And that's obviously different by nation, by area. The Europeans are doing it different to the United States is doing it. And some countries don't talk at all, but still do something. So that's a big variety of picture.
You have specific examples of countries that are doing actions?
Well, there's a lot of countries doing actions. Let's start with the small ones. That's always interesting, right? You see, Denmark has done a lot of work to really get CO2 free on electrical power. And they tried a lot also to use wood, for example, from Finland to generate power for Copenhagen, which is half of the population of Denmark. So you see a lot of work done with many countries in transforming the electrical power generation CO2-free. France, for example, is doing the completely different with nuclear, but it's in the end CO2-free.
Yeah.
And then Germany is somehow in this roadmap that they say, okay, we do it all with wind and solar, which is a journey which we also have to prove that it works. And by the way, nobody has yet achieved it all, but some are much more further down the road than others. And electrical power for sure is the first cornerstone you have to deal with, because we both know in transportation, we have a big shift towards electrification. That means we need CO2-free electrical power. Otherwise, this whole game doesn't work.
Absolutely. I mean, this is anyhow the key
that in all areas, the question is always, how do we transport and store green energy? Yeah? And you've talked about that all started with humankind with sitting around the fire. And fire is basically sun energy linked to carbon. And then we light it up and release the energy. This brings us to the, for me, one of the key questions, how do we store and transport green energy? What's your take on battery electric versus a hydrogen-based economy?
Well, battery electric systems are fantastic. That should be clear. I mean, we have new battery technology evolving all the time with the lithium ion technology that has been much more evolving than all of us thought over the years. It becomes more powerful. It becomes more cost efficient. Sure, it's a chemical storage of electrical energy, and that involves chemicals and materials that are also not abundantly available on the planet. So it is for sure not the cheapest way of dealing with energy at all. But it's a CO2-free way to store electrical energy. So it's definitely something which is a technology path to use. For cars, I think it's given that cars in a city area, in a wider urban area, so not in a far countryside, that's a perfect solution. And we see that also going through all the markets that electrical battery-based cars are a good solution. With some disadvantages sometimes because you need infrastructure. And we have infrastructure for petrol and gasoline, but we don't have infrastructure so much for electrical charging. And then comes the next thing, obviously, if you transport heavy goods for long duration runs, and that's what you're dealing with mostly in the truck business, that's also a challenge because you need much bigger batteries. The batteries are quite big. You need certain changes in processing of dealing with trucks, but also it's possible. So do I think the electrical battery side will come? Yes, for sure. It will be a large part of everything we do in transportation. And then comes the question of hydrogen. And there we have to chat what we think will come with that.
Yeah, and that is, in my opinion, sometimes really a fundamentalistic religious discussion we have sometimes with suppliers inside our own company, with customers, with regulators. So which one is the better one? Or is it both? What's your take on that?
Well, I'm a market economy guy. So I like that markets in the end sort out technologies what they're best applied for. And that always worked very well in the past, if you think about it. Nobody buys something if it's not good for him or nobody pays an overprice. Why should? If there's an alternative. And now we come to the alternative. My personal belief is if we really want to be successful transforming the world CO2-free, we probably need every single technology possible to become CO2-neutral. So if somebody thinks we don't need nuclear, that's probably a dream. If somebody thinks we don't need hydrogen, that's probably also a dream. Do we need it for everything then? No, we don't drive nuclear cars, which was a dream of the 60s. You remember that probably?
Yeah. So we don't. Thank God we don't have them. Yeah.
We don't probably drive all trucks with hydrogen. Yeah. It's not going to happen. Yeah. But will we need hydrogen also as a drivetrain, maybe as an engine or also as a fuel cell drivetrain? For sure, I think we will. Will we need it for all applications? Probably not. So let's see how that sorts out. But I think we better be ready to have these technologies available to us, because I think we all need them.
Yeah. When I'm talking or debating that, for me, it has always three core dimensions. The first is the product that can do the job. Here, I'm absolutely convinced we'll have it. You said it, we'll have battery electric trucks that can go 500 kilometers with a 600 kilowatt battery. We'll have fuel cell or hydrogen combustion trucks, which can do even better and potentially even can do it like we work today with trucks. So product for me is equal. The next thing is the price. You know, what is the future price of hydrogen at the pump? And what's the future price on electricity? Would you see electricity rather goes up or down in price? Or can you see that we'll have hydrogen not in the 10 euros per kilogram level where it's unfeasible? We have it at 5 for 50 euros per kilogram. What's your take if you look in your crystal ball?
That's now the key question, because we're not dealing only with the in-vehicle question. The in-vehicle question, I think we both could solve very quickly. We will have an array of vehicles which either have this big batteries in them, or they have a fuel cell in them, or they have a hydrogen engine in them. The transport vehicle market is a calculation market. So people calculate what they do with the vehicle, what they need it for. Do they need it for a far-off infrastructure construction site, or do they need it for a long-run transportation? And it's a pure mathematical calculation. If it's profitable, they use it. If it's not profitable, they don't use it.
Absolutely.
And therefore, we have two fights now going on. And I think the one fight is the new technology, which is CO2-free, same or better economically than the current technology, which is diesel-based, right? So is that calculation going around? That's part of the regulation. Second question is, can I operate the vehicle? So do I have the infrastructure to operate it? Do I get my electrical power as I need it in the break time of the driver, for example? Or do I get my hydrogen if I need it somewhere? And these questions, the infrastructure and the off-vehicle questions, what's the price of hydrogen? How much hydrogen is available? Where's the next hydrogen fuel station? Mm-hmm. What's the next charge station where I need to be on my road? That would be the decisive factors, I think, in the next years, how quickly the technology will be adapted. So it's good for us to bring all the nice vehicles, but people will only employ them if they have the infrastructure ready for them.
Okay. Sometimes I tell people, they expect that the CEO of a company is a chief fortune teller. I misuse now as a chief fortune teller for Bosch. What is the price of electricity in 2030, higher or lower than today, exclude inflation?
I don't have a concrete answer. Why not? Because it's first depending country by country and very much on the current state and the policy of the country. So if you want to answer that question for the US, it's probably a completely different answer than for France, and it's also a different answer for Germany. The question is, the continuous supply of CO2-free energy requires all kinds of infrastructure investments, storage facilities, new grids and all that. And the effects necessary on this, if you only work with wind and solar, I think that hasn't fully been calculated yet. And that can boost up energy prices to a level which is, for us, currently not yet fully acceptable. So hopefully we come to a point where electricity is much lower priced than today. Because today's pricing is not a good thing for transforming everything to electric, right?
No, that's far higher than any of our assumption is. So, but the next fortune teller question, hydrogen.
Hydrogen.
Cheaper than today or the same price?
Well, if it's not cheaper than today, it won't come to any application beside of some extraordinary, unachievable other applications than with hydrogen.
Yeah.
So obviously, everybody dreams about this $3-4 per kilogram target, right? But it's far away what we see of today.
But you have to get there, in my opinion.
If you don't get there, you won't see it fully applied.
Yeah.
That's very simple as that, right? Yeah.
And the next question is infrastructure. Do we have for trucking rest stops with 21 gigawatt chargers?
I think we relatively soon see that this is the decisive question for the application of these great vehicles which now are coming. Because you just mentioned it, there are trucks coming and they are ready to be shipped that can run 500, 600 kilometers, and they are with a battery from the truckload because of the weight restriction, which has been lifted a bit, right? If it can be lifted further, we will see. That's a question of the bridges.
Yeah.
So, but let's see. It's possible.
It's enormous amount of energy.
It is.
And I messed it up too when I asked Vishnu. I talked about gigawatt chargers. I said it's megawatt chargers. But it's definitely far beyond what we have today in our markets.
Absolutely. And we need to put them somewhere where the trucks are holding and people do a break.
Yeah.
Because actually you want to charge them in the break time. Mm. So let's assume that we have one of these parking lots with 100 trucks. And we have this megawatt chargers, then we are quickly in this 100 megawatt range of chargers, which we have there. That's not so easy to achieve because they need to have also these 100 megawatt electrical power. So somewhere has to bring it there, or we need to have a power plant there. Mm. And by the way, the power plant can't run all the time because probably there's not a continuous charging over the whole day. But in various time slots, there's more charging or less charging. So this infrastructure question is for sure the bigger question to solve than actually what we do on the vehicle side. Because I think on the vehicle side, in a couple of years, we're ready.
I don't ask you about your assumptions of hydrogen at every gasoline station because you partially answered it already. This is a huge undertaking and task. But now we have a dilemma, you know. We don't know whether electric energy gets cheaper. We don't know whether we have the charging infrastructure in place. We don't know whether we have hydrogen at between 4 and 5 euros per kilogram. And we don't know whether we have hydrogen at the pump. Now, 2030 is approaching pretty fast. What is necessary for the politics? What is necessary for us as industry companies to make it happen? Because failure is not an option we have.
So for us as technology companies, and we are not doing engines, we are not doing trucks, we are not doing even our total fuel cell systems, we only do parts and subsystems. So for us, it's important, all systems needed to build the final product, we need to get ready. That's very important because some of these have some tricks in them. It's possible, yes, physically it's possible, but it needs to be reliable, it needs to be quality checked, it needs to really work, and you don't want to run a truck which after 1,200 miles suddenly breaks down, right? You want to have a truck which really runs all the lifetime and is operating safe as a today's system, because today these systems are enormously quality-oriented, great machines. You don't see so many broken trucks around the road, so it works.
No, we go for a million miles.
Yeah. So that's what we also need. So all these kind of things need to be developed and need to be ready. And then comes the point we need to very, very tightly really follow the markets to bring those things into serious production, because that's another step into a serious production efficiently, which the market requires. So that's our role. That's a role which is different from the diesel times, because there you went from evolutionary step to evolutionary step. Now that's radical. So you need to be also dynamic, because can't think that things change. Mm-hmm. And you saw that also in the last years, right? Suddenly more mood was going towards the question, we need to bring the battery electric trucks up to longer ranges. Mm-hmm. Okay, worked. Now comes the question, what's about hydrogen engine, for example? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for some applications, seems to be a viable option, can be implemented quickly, but obviously it's completely senseless if there's no hydrogen sources. Yeah, because you need hydrogen for it. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But these things you need dynamically to adjust, and that's our job right now. We dynamically go on the technology side, research development is one thing, but then we dynamically adjust our capabilities and capacities in these various technologies. That doesn't solve the problem, I know that, but my role is to have everything ready once it's needed.
Mm. I mean, you mentioned hydrogen engines, meaning hydrogen combustion engines.
Yes.
Was it for you a surprise that suddenly entered the discussion, or was it always a possibility for Bosch?
When it was clear that some applications don't work with fuel cells and they don't work too good with batteries. I mean, this sounds exotic, but it's not so exotic. If we look at harvesters, they shouldn't be too heavy, otherwise they damage the ground. They drive slowly and they drive a very long time and very high output. So you need 250 kilowatts or more constant output, and this for hours and hours and hours. So that doesn't sound very good for battery, because this high output, so long hours and low weight, this is a bad combination for battery.
Yeah.
Fuel cell is a bad combination because the slow speed.
Yeah.
The slow speed means because we only have 60 degrees centigrade, which is the cooling temperature you have to match in fuel cells. You don't have this 100-something degrees, which you have on the diesel engine. So you need much more cooling air. And that means you would have to have a giant vent in front of that harvester. Mm. That doesn't work either. Definitely, there's a good approach to have a hydrogen engine, because it's CO2-free, it's easy to implement, it's lightweight, and so on. And therefore, for me, it was first a surprise that it came back, because I thought, oh, maybe the ICE life is over. On the other hand, the experiments showed very quickly that it's something in between a gasoline and a diesel engine. So suddenly we saw that technology is relatively quickly to be implemented. And that's an advantage, because you can bring this relatively quick in implementation. It doesn't have the efficiency of a fuel cell, yes.
Mm.
And it's relatively lightweight, easy to implement, same infrastructure in the vehicle, but same issue with the availability and cost of hydrogen. So here we are. It's relatively quickly now ready to implement, but it will also have its limitations, definitely.
And I can see that as a very interesting discussion inside your company, your boardroom, your management teams. I mean, we as OEMs, we have a close contact to the user of trucks, what we call our customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are our customers? We are your customers. Yeah. You bringing us parts and competing to a global, let's say, supply industry. However, you can set trends as well, and you have to bet on the right horses to be then the right partner for us when we ask for ultimately 100, 200, 300, 400,000 parts a year from you. How are you doing that in that chain? Do you feel yourself rather as someone who follows, or are you rather seeing yourself as someone who sets a trend?
Well, that depends. On one hand, we look very much to you as our direct customer and to the application customer, so the truckers, the operators, the people who run logistics systems, to see where these people are going. Same thing, we have to look extremely tight on regulators, because right now, let's be very honest, part is decided by the markets, part is decided by somebody influencing the market, which is the regulator. And let's be very honest, the regulator had a very hard time in the last years. Most regulators decided to influence markets much more than they have done in the decades before. That's a risky thing, because we are market economy, and this kind of influence on market economy we have not seen before. So we have to monitor the effects of that very carefully, because if regulators change their mind, that can be a real big effect on our portfolios, all of us, right? So we monitor this carefully, but at the same time, we're constantly searching to improve technology, because nothing is yet fully solved. So it is all technically possible, but it's not yet fully solved. Either it's efficiency-wise or cost-wise not solved, or it's raw material-wise not solved, or it's infrastructure-wise not solved. So there's many open questions still there. And that means there is still a chance that somebody comes up with a great idea and brings a new solution.
And that is something we experience on our side as well. When I look at our first battery electric trucks and now the generation two, generation three vehicles, day and night difference. When I see the progress we do on the fuel cell side in consumption, I mean, this is every day, you know, we push the needle forward. And I think the same happens in your company as well.
And that's actually the exciting part of this. We should never give up on the question if there's somebody, it can be anybody, right? Some engineer, some commercial people, some designer comes up with a great idea, wherever she, he is on this world. And this is something we should never give up, because this idea of that we decide today and this means in 30 years this will come out, I mean, it has never been true, right? So why should it be suddenly true now? There's always a good chance, a good opportunity that somebody comes up with a great idea. And let's be honest, for the CO2 transformation of this planet, we desperately need ideas, because it's not yet solved. So let's hope that your company, my company, employ a whole bunch of people that still have ideas.
No, and I'm convinced that there's, for me, not a hope, there's is conviction. I say always, we are not the problem, we are the solution. Yeah, you need strong OEMs to get great solutions, and transportation is key to our economy. And how would you say that for Bosch? We need strong suppliers, and now I hand it over to you.
Invented for life. Yeah. So we'll make it happen. Yeah. And especially for trucks, I see a big obligation for all of us to get it done, because that's kind of the backbone of the entire economy we run.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have nothing in our hands. We don't drink even the water we have on the table here if we don't have a truck running behind bringing it to us.
Yeah.
So for me, that's one of the key things. And by the way, in personal vehicles, if I buy a car, I can also buy unlogical, crazy things because I want them.
Yeah, your stereo in your car is potentially more expensive than the stereo at home.
Exactly. Yeah. So things like this can happen and will happen, and it's actually great that they happen, because that's human behavior. Yeah, we buy something because we want it and not because we need it. This is typical for the private car business. In the trucks, this has to run on perfect efficiency, and therefore it's such a high hurdle. If you bring technology into a truck, you have to be sure it runs for a long time. You have to be sure it's efficient. Therefore, we love to work also for this truck industry and do all this technology for trucks, because it has a complete different level of achievement you need to have before you actually put in the vehicle. And therefore, I also see the steps you do in the vehicles.
Yeah.
And I'm always, always very keen on being in these new vehicles, because that's what I want.
Yeah, and therefore we say our mission of our company is for all who keep the world moving. Yeah, because really without transportation, our modern society would come to a stop. And it's our job, our obligation to provide our customers with the best possible product. And I can tell every customer listening to this podcast, there are a lot of Bosch parts in the products you drive every day.
We'll always work hard to keep this done. And we always work hard to stay there and improve and give you new ways to improve the vehicle whenever it comes. Because it's not only the drivetrain, we all know that. It's also the safety of the vehicle, it's also the safety of the driver. Yeah, his condition, her condition, whoever is driving these vehicles has to know that the vehicle also takes care of the driver, because anything can happen. You are alone driving this vehicle. And that means also the safety of the person who is in the vehicle driving it is also of our concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Stefan, it's so great to have you with us. Thank you for the exciting conversation. And thanks for your insight, not just in the insight in your company, but the future of human mankind as well. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Martin.
That is it for today. If you want to know more about the historic technological transformation, it should be worthwhile for you to check out former episodes of our podcast. And please join us again for our next episode of Transportation Matters, because transportation truly matters for all of us. Until then, take care and goodbye.
That was Transportation Matters, the CEO podcast of Daimler Truck. If you enjoyed what you've heard, share this episode and subscribe to Transportation Matters on your preferred podcast platform. You can do this by tapping the follow or subscribe button right next to the podcast title.